All right, well, welcome to our discussion of Parshat Pinchas, the transition of leadership from Moses to Joshua. It's in this Parshat that we actually have that great transition, very important, the momentous transition between Moshe and the next generation. Of course, to follow Moshe is always a very difficult task, extremely difficult. Lo kam Yisrael Moshe, by definition, there's never anyone who's like Moshe. Moshe transmitted the Torah directly. There is no Torah after Moshe. So by definition, a successor will have to pale in comparison. As the rabbis say, Joshua is like the moon and Moshe is like the sun. He reflects the Torah. He can only reflect his Torah. He can't create new Torah. All right. Still, was it a good transition or a bad transition? Was it a smooth transition or not a smooth transition? So this is our question for today. And let's take a look and let's see what we come up with. So let's get started at the beginning. We have Pinchas from Moshe to Joshua, transitional leadership. When we look at this transition, it begins with the following words, by Daver Moshe el Hashem Limor. Moses spoke to the Lord saying, in all cases in the Torah, it's always the God's Lord spoke to Moses saying, Hashem, by Daver Hashem Moshe Limor. Here, by Daver Moshe el Hashem Limor. Moshe is the one talking. Moshe commands God to find a successor. What does he say? Let the Lord Hashem, source of all breath and flesh, appoint someone over the community. You see, everybody is different. So you have to find someone who knows how to appreciate each person. A leader has to be able to work with old and young, with rich and poor, with this type and the other type, with people who are complainers, people who are not complainers. Right, so source of all breath, of all flesh, find someone who can deal with each breath and each person who's different. So Moshe requests that there be a new leader. What should the new leader do? Should go out before them. That's really an expression for war. You lead them in war and before them. Come in before them. He has to bring them back from the war. He has to be a good warrior. And shall take them out and bring them in. He has to be in front of them, take them back to war, take them home. So that the Lord's Hashem's community may not be like sheep without a shepherd. He's worried that the Jews will be like a sheep without a shepherd. Now, what's the question? The question is, he has a devoted servant. He's been working for him all this time. He even appointed him as a general against Amalek. Why wouldn't he say, God, I hereby appoint Joshua. Or God, what do you think about Joshua? Or God, could you please appoint Joshua? What about Joshua? What do you mean to be like a sheep without a shepherd? Appoint the guy. What exactly is holding him back? Anyway, very nice. He wants there to be a leader. To be a new shepherd. And Hashem answered Moshe and he said, single out Joshua, son of Nun. Kach lecha Yehoshua ben Nun. And in Isha Sharuach Bo, a man with spirit inspired. And v'samachtai yado ala, put your hand on him. That's called the smicha. So he says, you have to take Joshua. So the question is, was that an obvious choice? Who were the other choices? What else could it have been, right? So I once made up a whole chart of could have been play. Who were the other candidates? Kalev was one. Who else? Maybe Pinchas, Lazar. They're Kohanim though, so it's problematic. Who were the other possible choices? Other Nesiim, the leaders of other tribes. But in any event, take Yehoshua ben Nun, because he has a ruach, a special ruach. Why is he chosen? For his spiritual ruach. Rashi says, take one who has been examined by you, the one familiar, who you're familiar with. Tak lecha, take for yourself. It doesn't say this in this translation. Kach lecha Yehoshua ben Nun, take to thee. What does that mean? You know him well, because he's your servant. He is your shamash. He is your right-hand man. Of course you should pick him. Which leads to the question, why didn't Moshe suggest it? He needed Hashem to suggest it. It's a question. Let's look at some Midrashim and see how they take this transition. Medrash Rabbah, classic Medrash, collection of Medrash. Mara, Lakesh Lefarzeh, Chasidah Nachlos. Why is this story, after it says that they have to inherit the land to the 12 tribes in this with these leaders? Gavin Jerobin, Oslav, and Avim. He says, he he saw Yarshu Benot Slavcha Navim. He saw that the daughters of Slavcha took over for their father. They were able to get a piece of land from their father. So then Moshe immediately says in the next section, I have to get what I need. If the daughters of Slavcha can take over for Slavcha, I think those are the women who got a special part of the land, even though women don't get land, then my sons should worthily inherit from me. So who was the other candidate? His sons. Why didn't he say appoint my sons? He didn't want to be selfish. He was hoping for his sons. If you make the fig, you'll eat the fruits. If you plant a fig tree, you will eat the fruits of the fig tree. Your children sat around watching television. They did not study Torah. Joshua, he gave you a lot of sherut. I mean, sherut is service. He gave you a lot of kovod, gave you honor, kovod. You would always get up early and stay late in your base medrash, in your court. He would serve the people. He would set up the benches. And you don't want to have a hard bench, so you put a mat down on the floor, on the bench. Since he served you with all his might, he's worthy of serving the Jews. We're hiring not a leader, but a public servant. He shouldn't lose his reward for the things he did. That's what it says. That's why it says, take Joshua to fulfill what it says. The one who plants the fig tree, he will eat the fruits. Joshua did the hard work. He served Moshe. He served the people. Now he's going to be able to be worthy of serving the people again. But it's all about public service. It's about not being high on your horse that you're so important. No, he was always about service. Set up the chairs. And that's what a leader is supposed to be. He's there to serve, not to lord over. But he did the work. He deserves to reap the fruits. So according to this, the transition wasn't so smooth. Moshe was thinking, hey, maybe it could be my sons. And Hashem says, no, not going to be your sons. How do we know that Moshe was thinking that? Because the previous section is about inheritance. Midrash Agadah, Buber. There's a collection, not the famous philosopher Buber, but there was another Buber who collected these Midrashim from different sundry sources, and he found the following. When Moshe heard that he was going to die, he started asking for mercy for the Jews. Give them a shepherd who will have enough spirit to suffer the Jews, to tolerate the Jews. He's a master of the universe. You know everybody's spirit, who's has a lot of patience, who gets angry all the time. Somebody who would go out in front of them, even in the desert, because we're starting off in the desert. Someone would come in front of them. What does that mean? To do whatever they need. He'll bring them with alacrity. He'll bring them in with his prayers. All these different needs they have. If you're a leader, you can't. Now it's interesting. He says, if you're a leader, you can't get angry. Moshe seems to be the one who gets angry a lot. So it's interesting that he may be, according to this Medrash, the Medrash or Moshe himself are criticizing himself. So Akash Baruch says, call the Rosh Amarta, everything you're looking for, Tim Sam Yoshua, you'll find it in Yoshua. Tamidcha, your student. Lech Lakimoto. Lift him up, establish him. That's why it says, take for yourself, Shubin, and he's your student. Take him. Again, big question. If it was so obvious, why didn't Moshe say, yeah, God, you know, who am I to say? Your appointments are made by God, but I think Yoshua would be a good candidate. After all, he worked so hard. Such a good student. Why didn't he say that? This Medrash doesn't give a theory why he didn't say it, but it does seem that he didn't appreciate that Joshua had all the qualities that he was looking for. The Yalkut Shimoni is a later collection of all these different Midrashim, and it says the following. Sometimes it has material that's unique to that particular collection. The Yalkut asked the question explicitly. Why didn't Moshe say, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, I think Yoshua should be. Do you agree, my God? Why didn't he suggest it? Why didn't he beg for God, please, let it be Yoshua. He worked so hard. He says, no, he was concerned for him. He didn't want him to get punished. What's the analogy? Little child gets burnt by a coal. So he sees a beautiful gold thing. So he thought there was also a coal. So he saw a jewel. He thought everything's a coal. So Moshe says, it's a coal. Being a leader is tough. Moshe said like this, he thought Aaron, he wanted Aaron to be instead of Moshe. He wanted Aaron to be the leader instead of him. Aaron was punished. He died a little bit young, a little bit early. Not that much early, but a little bit. So therefore he said, I'm afraid to give it to Joshua. He's going to get punished. Whoever I appoint that won't make it, that won't make it to Israel, they'll get punished. So he had mercy on it. Not that he didn't like Joshua. He loved Joshua. That's why he didn't want to appoint him. You want to give a job like this, right? People always joke about leadership that the president, he can't wait to get out of the job. That's what a Jewish leader always has to be modest about his job. And that's it. Now, in order to analyze by looking at Tanakh independent of the Medrash, just look at the Chumash by itself, what is the relationship between Moshe and Joshua? Is it more like, oh, Moshe's in love with Joshua, he doesn't want to try and protect him, the paternalistic view? Or is it more like Moshe doesn't appreciate Joshua, or doesn't even like Joshua? So let's see what the relationship is. Just because he was his main Masharis doesn't mean he liked him. Some people, they're right-hand man, they don't like them. He gets the job done, so he lets him do it, but he's not really somebody he likes. So that's the question. So let's go through the stories of Moshe and Joshua in Tanakh, and let's see how they get along. Well, first, Moshe expresses tremendous faith in Joshua. Moshe, as soon as they had the first attack of an enemy, namely Amalek, our arch enemy, Moshe immediately says, Joshua, choose people. Go fight Amalek. Tomorrow I'm going to stand on the mountain. I'll be the cheerleader. And you, I'll pray. And you, you go fight. So we see that Moshe has confidence in Joshua that he'll fight for the Jews. So now that they're going to conquer Israel, seems like he's a good choice. Unless he's too old, maybe. Maybe that was 40 years ago. Now it's 40 years later. But in any event, we know that he thinks he's a good general. Okay. What about Joshua's relationship with Moshe? By Dibar Hashem Moshe Panim Panim, God spoke to Moshe face to face on Mount Sinai, just like I speak to you. Then he comes back. After a while, he comes back from speaking to God, comes to the camp. Mishartho, his servant, his attendant, Joshua, son of Nun, Nar. He is a youth, or Nar could also mean he's his boy, his helper. Lo yamish mitucho, he never left the tent. He's always waiting in the tent for Moshe to come back. Lo yamish mitucho, this is an image of him. It's later, God is going to say to Joshua at the beginning of the book of Joshua, Lo yamush tevatam epicha, the words of Torah should never leave your mouth, because he's someone who never leaves the tent. Tent means a place of studying Torah. Metaphorically, symbolically, it means Joshua never stopped learning Torah. He was always learning. He was always there. Whenever Moshe was teaching, he was teaching Aaron and his sons. He was listening because he was there. So certainly Joshua was a loyal servant. But when Moshe came down from Mount Sinai, he heard that God told him there was a golden calf going on. And he says, so Joshua is like on the halfway of the mountain. Moshe comes, he sees him first, and he wants to know what's going on. Now, Moshe, it's a little unfair. Moshe knows what's going on. Joshua doesn't. So, Joshua says, I don't know. Must be some kind of war going on down there. So Moshe says, what are you talking about? There's no sound of triumph. There's no sound of people winning and losing a war. That's not what I hear. I don't hear people screaming and yelling like a war. I hear people responding to songs. That's what I hear. Exactly what these words mean. There's a different interpretation. This is one interpretation. But in any event, whatever they're arguing about, they're arguing. Joshua does not seem to hear what Moshe hears in the crowd. Now, reading a crowd is important, right? If you come to shul and you tell a joke and the rabbi doesn't know if the joke went over well, it didn't want to go away. He needs to know. He needs to be able to feel the pulse of the people. Right? You gave Musar, you gave a speech about how people should behave. You have to know, how did it go over? So Joshua misjudges the crowd. The Ramban says that the rabbis have said in Haggadah, Kohelet Rabbah, one of the collections of Medrash on Kohelet, on Ecclesiastes. Moses told Joshua, is it possible that one who is destined to be the leader of Israel cannot distinguish between different kinds of sounds? He says, what kind of leader are you? You're going to be my successor? You don't know the difference between a war and a song. These are people having a great time. They're having a party down there. That's what's going on. There's no war down there. You don't understand the crowd. So according to this, Moshe and Yoshua have an unpleasant exchange. And there's another story. Eldad made a parshas Baloscha Bamidbar. A youth ran out and told Moses, Eldad made that are acting as prophet in the camp. You appointed 70 elders. There are two other guys who are also saying that they're prophets. So Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' attendant from his youth. From among one of his young people, spoke up and he said, I don't need Moshe Klein. My Lord Moses, restrain them, put them in jail. They can't prophesy. You didn't give them permission. Moses said to him, are you wrought up on my account? He says, I'm a Kanea, tell you, you're jealous for me. Would it be that the Lord's people were prophets and then Hashem put the Spirit upon them? I don't care. Let all the Jews be prophets. What do I care? You got two extra prophets? Great. I wish everybody would be a prophet. I don't want to be a prophet. Whoever gave me this job anyway. Let everybody be prophets. What am I? I'm jealous of other people being prophets. Let them all be prophets. What do I care? On the contrary, I'd love it for everyone to be prophet. So on the one end, it's clear Joshua was trying to defend the rights of his Rebbe and the honor and dignity and the position and stature of his Rebbe. But it also is clear that Moshe says, you don't understand me. I'm not concerned about people prophesying. Let them prophesy all they want. Now the Medrash says that the prophecy was that Moshe is going to die and Joshua is going to bring them into the land of Israel. So Joshua felt bad. Don't say that. They hadn't decreed yet that Moshe was going to die and Joshua would take over. But according to the Medrash, that's what they were saying. So according to the Medrash, Moshe knew from the beginning, previous Medrash also, Moshe knew that he was destined to be the leader of Israel. There is this idea, the Medrash, that Moshe knew he was going to take over. So then that goes back to the question. Why didn't he say to God, okay, well, obviously Joshua was going to take over. And so it's an interesting problem. But again, we have a discussion after the golden calf. Moses and Joshua are kind of bickering about the details. We have a story of the prophets where Moshe and Yeshua are kind of not seeing eye to eye about this business of the new prophets. It's weird. The Chidah was a great Sephardic rabbi who actually hung out with Ashkenazim as well. So he says, Kas Kasha is a little bit of a question. This is Chomat Anach, is his comment. If, as the Medrash says, that he knew that the prophecy was that Joshua would be the next prophet, or that he himself said to him, hey, you're the next prophet. If you're the next leader, how come you don't understand what kind of sound it is? This is before the spies, before it was condemned. Why is Moshe praying in our parsha, saying, oh my God, terrible, they're not going to have any leaders? According to the Medrash, he's been telling Joshua for 40 years that he's going to be the leader. And then he had to have God tell him to take Joshua. But look what Yonah said. He knew it already. He knew it in prophecy. You have a prophecy, then you just go do it. Let's just say, and Moshe took Joshua and he stood him up and in front of the people and he appointed him. Why? Because he had a prophecy. So according to this Medrash, it's very difficult. And again, even without the Medrash, obviously he's going to take over. He's the key man. He's your right-hand man. He's the general. He is your assistant. So the assistant takes over, right? The rabbi is a rabbi for 40 years and he has an assistant rabbi. Who's supposed to take over? Some young guy from the YU who just graduated 3 years ago? You got the assistant rabbi. He's been working for 40 years. This is his big opportunity. Let him take over. So we have this question. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that there's a big debate about what the prophets were prophesying. Some say they said, oh, Moshe is dying and Joshua will take us to Israel. Another rabbi said, or Nachman said, no, there is prophesying about the future, about the Mashiach. So different opinions. So the Gemara says, according to the one who says the other opinions, this is the reason why it's written. And Moshe said to him, are you jealous, my sake? How will that everybody be a prophet? What do I care if they're prophesying about the Mashiach? But according to the one who says that Eldad made the prophecy that Moses will die and Joshua will bring him into the land of Israel, would have been satisfactory to Moses. All the people of Israel would say similar things. What is Moshe saying? Oh, what do I care? Let everybody be a prophet. That's not the point. The point is that they're saying you're dead and I'm going to take over. I don't like that prophecy, says Joshua. That's not nice. I'll take over. I don't know who's taking over. I don't trust that prophecy. So you mean Moshe said, no, let everybody say that I'm dying and you'll take over. That's what Moshe wanted. So the Gemara answers, he did not conclude it before. He just said, Moshe made. So he didn't really realize what they were saying. He didn't know what they were saying. In any event, it's interesting. But this idea that maybe he knew that Moshe is going to die and Joshua would take over. Very interesting. According to the Medrash, Moshe always knew who it was. That raises a big question about our Parsha. Why did Moshe not say, God, you told me in prophecy that Joshua was taking over. I'd like to appoint him as an example. Then we have another question. If it's such a wonderful thing, it's beautiful. Moshe is about to die. And he says, God, you got to have a new leader. Now, I've been focusing on the fact that it's a little bit strange. He's Moshe, very nice, Moshe. You want to have a new leader? That's wonderful. But then I have a question. Why don't you pick the guy right in front of you? He's right in front of your nose. Why don't you take him? So on the one hand, I give bravo, encore, unbelievable, big yishkoyach to Moshe Rabbeinu. He wants to have a new leader. He recognizes that you can't just leave the people with nothing. It's not the Soviet Union where the leader dies and then they had to have a committee to decide who's taking over next. It has to be a system how the next leader takes over, or at least you have to appoint a new person. So that's wonderful. But what's kind of weird or even silly is to think it'll be anybody but Joshua. He's been training for 40 years. So that point that Moses did very admirably appoint Joshua, and he saw to it that was done. God said to him, you're going to die. He says, wait a second, I can't die. We need a new leader. So Hashem says, fine, let's appoint the new leader. But that's very admirable. What about his successor? Did Joshua get the message? Did Joshua say to himself, wow, that's amazing. Moshe appointed the leader before he died. I better appoint the leader before I die. So look in the book of Joshua, last chapter. Israel served the Lord during the lifetime of Joshua and the lifetime of the elders who lived on after Joshua and who had experienced all the deeds that the Hashem had wrought for Israel. So what happened after Joshua? The elders, he appointed a committee. When he died, it was taken over by a committee. That's not leadership. Everything fell apart. After Joshua, everything completely falls apart. Joshua does not learn the lesson from Moshe that you have to have a successor. One person who succeeds. So, very strange. I'd like to compare it to Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein. I went to Yeshivat Har Etzion. It was a very unusual yeshiva. It was originally headed by Rav Amital, and he was very modest, and he didn't want to be in charge. So he brought Rav Lichtenstein to also be in charge of yeshiva. Instead of him, Rav Lichtenstein said, I'll accept the position if you, Rav Amital, stay as also the head of the yeshiva. So they had an unusual thing for about 1970-something until about 2000-something, which is certainly about 40 years or whatever, 40, 50 years. They had two heads of my yeshiva. That's very nice. But then as they were getting older, after they reached 80, they appointed successor for Rav Amital, and then they appointed successor for Rav Lichtenstein. So they, before they got super old, they appointed successors because they understand that it's good to have a smooth transition. And there was no fighting. They appointed, now they also appointed a committee since the yeshiva was traditionally headed by two. So now it's headed by three. So, you know, they gave the cover, the honor to a number of different people, each one having their own strengths. Okay, so it was a little bit of a committee, but it's not 70 elders. It's three people. And they run the yeshiva, and they do a beautiful job. And there's no problem. So it's really a beautiful thing. And that was a great act they did. They actually stepped down and let the other people take. So if we look at all the possibilities, it goes like this. Either Moshe loved Joshua, but wanted divine approval. He said, look, I'd be happy to decide who it is, but I have heard some prophecies about who it's going to be about. Far be it from me to decide. You should decide. Let you decide. I was appointed by you, God. You should appoint the next leader. Second idea is that he, like the first idea, he loved Joshua, but he loved him too much to appoint him for the job. Who wants to give a job like this? It's not a good job for a good Jewish boy to be in charge of all the Jews. It's too difficult. And spiritually speaking, you could get punished if the Jews misbehave. You get punished for it. It becomes your problem. The Jews did the golden calf. Aaron suffered for it. Moshe suffered. Thirdly, and this is based on my experience rather than on something in the verses per se, but you can certainly read it into the story. He thought he was a good second in command. When you're second in command, if you're the assistant rabbi for 40 years, people will say, you know, he's a wonderful assistant rabbi. He's not the material for their leader. Right? So sometimes that happens to you. Someone is so good at being the second in command and being selfless and letting the other one do all the work and, you know, getting all the honor and everything. And he says that he sets up the tables, he puts a tablecloth on, right? That everyone thinks, well, this guy, he can't be the leader. He's the tablecloth guy. So Moshe could have fallen in that pit. Now again, Moshe is not me. Moshe is not you. Moshe is not the masses. But it's true that in general, people make that mistake that second in command always seems like he's second fiddle. He can't be first fiddle. You have to get somebody with a briefcase from somewhere else in order to be the first fiddle. The fourth possibility is he didn't like him. And we showed that there is some evidence of that. That they don't see eye to eye. There are conversations. There are no other conversations. Maybe I missed one. I think those are all the conversations that they had together. So it doesn't bode very well, but the few conversations were given to get a glimpse into Moshe Yoshua dynamics, not great. So maybe he didn't like him that much. He thought he doesn't understand the crowd. He's overly jealous for me. He wants there to be a limited number of prophets. So maybe he didn't like him. It's hard to say that. I'm not saying I'd like to say that. The Medrash says that possibility number five, he wanted his own kids. Moshe's human, and he was hoping his children would take over. Like Samuel also, he was hoping the kids would take over. The kids were corrupt. And finally, he had no idea. Meaning you could just say that it's not his business to appoint. Right? Moshe experienced that he was appointed by God at the burning bush. He thought there should be a new burning bush to appoint a new leader. He says, wait a second, what do you mean I'm dying? Where's the new leader? Who's going to take over? They're going to be like sheep without shepherd. So what's going on here? So maybe he had no idea. So I'm offering six possibilities as to what the story was. I have a hunch that, you know, it's sort of a combination thereof, and particularly that something in the middle there, the possibility three and four, that he either thought he was just a good follower, not a good leader, or that he actually thought that he didn't have the stuff, as one of the Midrashim actually seemed to indicate that maybe he didn't have the stuff it took to be the leader. So these are my different options for us, and I thank you for joining us tonight.